Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Profound Medical Corp. Third Quarter 2017 Financial Results Teleconference. All lines have been placed in a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for live questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to reach a live operator. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to Stephen Kilmer, Investor Relations. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start out by pointing out that our newswire services experienced a system-wide interruption, so we have posted a PDF of today's press release on our website. Let me also point out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but is not limited to, the expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer. Often, not always, forward-looking statements can be identified by the use of the words such as plans, is expected, expects, schedules, intends, contemplates, anticipates, believes, proposes, or variations, including negative variations of such words and phrases, or state that certain actions, events, or results may, could, would, with, might, or will be taken, occur, or be achieved. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management, the forward-looking state of the company's management. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all, and could differ materially as a result of known or and unknown risks and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the pharmaceutical industry, economic factors, the equity markets, generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual events or results to differ materially from those described in the forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as described by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they were, made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. On the call today representing Profound are Dr. Arun Menawat, our Chief Executive Officer, and Rashed Dewan, our VP of Finance. With that said, I'll turn the call over to Rashed.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Profound's Q3 2017 conference call. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound Medical, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company. And for those of you who are shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I will turn the call over to Arun in a moment for an update on our commercial activities. However, before I do, I would like to provide a brief update on our 2017 third quarter financial results. The company recorded revenue for the 3 months ended September 30, 2017, totaling $1.5 million. This compared to nil in the third quarter of 2016 and reflected a 53% increase sequentially over revenue recorded in previous quarter. Our R&D expenditures were $307,000 higher for the 3 months ended September 30, 2017, compared to the same period in 2016. The increase in R&D spending was attributed to the ramp-up of clinical trial activities and the inclusion of the Sonalleev R&D team. Clinical trial costs, salaries and benefits, rent, as well as travel expense increased by $232,000, $390,000, $103,000, and $37,000 respectively, resulting from ongoing activities related to the initiation of clinical site visits, enrollment initiatives, and patient treatment. Amortization of intangible assets increased by approximately $187,000 due to the Sonalleev transaction, license agreement costs, and software upgrades. Offsetting this amount was a decrease in material and consulting fees expense by $361,000 and $174,000 respectively. These costs were lower compared to the 3 months ended September 30, 2016, due to lower research and development initiatives and in-house manufacturing of disposables. G&A expenses for the 3 months ended September 30, 2017, were higher by $633,000 compared to the same period in 2016. Professional and consulting fees increased by $241,000 due to the legal fees associated with the acquisition of Sonalleev products and the inclusion of Sonalleev operation related to the bookkeeping and ID costs. These are considered to be one-time increased costs. Share-based compensation increased by $278,000 as a result of options vesting to board members and management. Overall, the company recorded a Q3 2017 net loss of $5.5 million or 9 cents per common share compared to a net loss of $4.1 million or 10 cents per common share for the same three-month period in 2016. As of September 30, 2017, Profound had cash of $16.3 million. This includes net proceeds from the bond deal financing, which was completed in September 2017 through a syndicate of underwriters led by Echelon Wealth Partners and including CIBC World Markets. We are very pleased to have this financing completed as it will allow us to complete the TAC trial as well as support overall global sales and marketing plans for the TulsaPro and Sonalese. As at November 7, 2017, Profound had 73,117,377 common shares issued and outstanding. Thank you. I'll now turn the call over to Arun.
Thank you so much, Rashad, and good afternoon, everyone. And I hope you have a copy of our press release from our website. I'd like to focus our opening remarks on three topics today. First, I'd like to update you on the progress we're making on TAC trial enrollment. Second, I'll update you on the status of the Sonalese business integration. And third, I'd like to highlight our strategic agenda. Let's start with the TAC trial. For the new participants on our call, TAC is a prospective single-arm pivotal clinical study of 110 patients that is designed to further evaluate the safety and efficacy of TulsaPro to ablate prostate tissue in patients with localized organ-confined prostate cancer. The trial is being carried out in 13 sites, 9 of which are in North America and the rest in Europe. Approximately two-thirds of the patients are being treated in North America at some of the most renowned sites and investigators in the world, including Sunnybrook Hospital, London Health Sciences Center, Johns Hopkins University, Indiana University, University of Texas Southwestern, UCLA, William Beaumont, University of Chicago, and Vanderbilt University. The primary safety endpoint of the TAC is frequency and severity of adverse events, and primary efficacy endpoint for the study is PSA reduction of greater than 75%. If successful, TAC is expected to support Profound's application to the U.S. FDA for the approval of the market TulsaPro system in the United States. As of now, we have treated 73 patients in the trial, and we have another 37 more to go. Although recruiting has picked up and our clinical team is optimistic about continued recruitment at a rapid pace, it is possible that we will finish the trial by mid-February as compared to our goal of finishing by year-end. In the meantime, we can tell you that we continue to receive positive feedback from the surgeon community and the patients who are being treated in the commercial setting in Europe as the commercial data continues to track consistent to the published data from phase one study. After the TAC study completes recruitment, it is our goal to publish interim results throughout 2018 as the data becomes available, particularly as it relates to primary endpoints of the trial. Second, I want to highlight the fact that the third quarter was extraordinarily busy as we added the transaction with Philips and the resulting Sonalee business integration to on our plates. In spite of that, and the fact that July and August are typically the slowest months in Europe, I'm delighted with the revenue that showed another strong sequential increase, as Rashad highlighted, over the previous quarter. Going forward, I think you should expect steady revenue growth from us. Third, let's talk about the strategic agenda of Profound. In many ways, we became a different company in the third quarter of 2017. With the acquisition of Philips Sonalee business, Profound began to make the leap from a medical device company focused exclusively on prostate cancer ablation to a platform company offering real-time MR guidance as the imaging platform and ultrasound as an energy source to deliver the incision-free ablative technology to clinicians. The transaction also allows us to immediately transition from a development stage company to an organization focused primarily on growth, as we now market both Sonalleve and TULSA-PRO as a platform with a deepened relationship with Philips, a strategic partnership for TULSA-PRO with Siemens, and the expectation that we will sign with additional MRI companies in the future. Even in these early days, the benefits of being a platform company are materializing quickly. Today, the commercial applications of our platform are prostate cancer, uterine fibroid, and bone metastasis. While our primary focus will remain on successfully commercializing these therapies, over time, we do expect our surgeons to find additional uses of our technology. A good case in point is our recent announcement regarding the treatment of BPH using TULSA-PRO. A brief history of our prostate product illustrates this perfectly. In March 2017, we announced the sale of TULSA-PRO system to the Turku University Hospital in Finland. In the same month, we also announced that the first TULSA-PRO prostate cancer patient paid procedure was successfully completed at the Alta Clinic in Germany under the supervision of Dr. Argan Lumiani. Fast forward just a few months, early this week, we announced that based on their early experience with using TULSA-PRO for treatment of localized prostate cancer, Alta's Dr. Lumiani has started supervising treatments for BPH patients, and Turku expects to soon be enrolling the first BPH patient in the university's ongoing clinical research with TULSA-PRO. BPH is a non-cancerous enlargement of the prostate gland due to an overgrowth of prostate cells. It is a common condition as men age, often impeding the flow of urine and creating significant urinary symptoms. Current modes of surgical treatment of BPH can potentially lead to various complications and may require long recovery times. We believe that the unique inside-out treatment approach of TULSA-PRO may present an ideal modality for treatment of BPH, as it enables incision-free ablation by providing real-time MR visualization as well as millimeter precision. While I don't want to get too ahead of myself on this application, it is a very large market opportunity for TULSA-PRO that doesn't require any technology changes or upgrades. It also points to the unique flexibility of TULSA-PRO to ablate all or just a precise portion of an anatomy, so an anatomical target, in this case, the prostate. So I'm very excited about the possibility. I would also like to update you on reimbursement-related activities in our targeted markets. Specifically, I would like to highlight the significant reimbursement progress we have started to make in Germany for TULSA-PRO. TULSA has now received a dedicated procedure OPS code in Germany. Our efforts are now focused on obtaining reimbursement through the MUB process. In order to proceed with this process, TULSA needed to be pre-reviewed via the Joint Federal Committee, or GBA, which is responsible for ratification of new procedures for coverage by the statutory health insurance public system. I'm happy to report that just a few weeks ago, the GBA panel voted in favor of Profound's positioning in this process, agreeing that although TULSA is a new procedure, it is considered to be the next step innovation in the already accepted transrectal HIFU methodology, therefore enabling hospitals to submit MUB inquiries without having to provide additional clinical evidence. MUB applications have now been submitted, and a status decision is expected at the end of January 2018. So summarizing today's discussion, the U.S. pivotal tech trial is proceeding well. We're continuing to get commercial traction developed in our European pilot launch for of our prostate product, and the integration of Sonalee business has been successful and profound transformation into a platform company is well on its way. This ends my prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Please hold while we poll for questions. We have our first question from Doug Lowe from Elchin Wealth. Please say your question.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Arun, just kind of wanted to focus on Sonalee for a minute, if I could. I only have the press release in front of me. I haven't seen your full financials or MD&A. So I just wonder, can you provide sort of a breakdown of Sonalee MR HIFU revenue contribution versus versus Tulsa Pro? And as in prior quarters, would you be able to give us some specific details on how many Tulsa Pro systems were sold and where?
Yeah. So, Doug, that's a great question. So we are selling about a device a month. That is sort of consistently been true. And even though, as you know, summer months are difficult, but I think that with Sonalee addition is still true. I think that what we are doing is we're branding Sonalee and Tulsa Pro together as one platform now, and we're now calling it Sonalee. You will see a significant effort from us on branding. So in that sense, what we're going to do is really provide numbers only for the one platform in the future. And so this is why I didn't separate these because then we'll have to sort of pull them back together. And along the same lines, I think that the other question really we've been debating inside also is, you know, recurring revenue versus capital revenues. And what we are doing is, what I can tell you is most of the revenues at the moment are capital revenues, very little recurring revenues. But as the recurring revenues begin to grow, we will certainly start to break those down, and we'll break down services and, you know, we expect software and so on. So, but for now, I think it's safe to assume that we are selling one product, one platform. The price point has gone a little bit higher compared to the past, but that, you know, we're selling at the same pace, about a device a month.
For a minute, take a step back. I mean, thanks for sort of providing some geographic granularity on where you have systems placed in, mostly in North America and Europe, but elsewhere as well. Not sure how many of those have been sold versus placed, but sort of irrelevant to my question, which is just wondering what sort of R&D activities that you might be undertaking as sort of a separate engine to drive sales in all markets where you have placements. And then maybe if you could maybe just sort of provide a little bit more detail on what your U.S. regulatory strategy might be. It wasn't entirely clear from any Philips documentation what the regulatory status of Sonalee was in the U.S. So if there any sort of, if there's sort of a clinical regulatory strategy specific to North America that you can share the details for, that would be helpful as well. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. No, they're a great question. So our strategy is this, that we are focusing on Europe, so most of the sales, in fact, I think all of the sales are really European sales in the third quarter and South America. Okay. And we are building a sales strategy for Asia at this point, and that is going to be our next target. So China, Japan, South Korea, India, those are the countries that are target countries. So Europe, we're working very closely with our partners with Philips and Siemens. We have salespeople who are now working with them on a day-to-day basis. In Asia, we are developing the strategy. We've hired a full-time vice president of business development who is based here but has significant experience in Asia. So you'll see some more from us in Asia. With respect to your other question on the FDA strategy for Sonalee, So we are, you know, at the moment it's approved as a CE mark for fibroids and bone metastasis. We have visited most of the customers of Sonalleve in North America, even though it is not cleared for use in North America. It is being used on a research basis under IDEs. And what I can tell you is that feedback is actually very positive. They want to use the product. They want to get an FDA strategy in place as quickly as possible. So certainly fibroids and bone metastasis are two applications we're looking at. The other application we're looking at is hyperthermia in that space. And I cannot tell you which of those we will go after first. We're looking to meet with the FDA in the fourth quarter so that we can get the feedback from the FDA and figure out what is the fastest route to get there. And we'll look at the market size and so on to kind of assess that. But you'll hear about that from us in the year-end call with respect to the details for the U.S. strategy.
Great. Good stuff. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we have our next question from, I'm sorry if I mispronounced this, Prakash Gaud from CIBC. Please say your question.
Thank you very much. Hi, everybody. I just have a couple of questions. First of all, on the issue of adoption, Arun, I know it's early days, but outside of the clinical program, do you have an actual number of patients that have now gone through the TULSA-PRO procedure? And can you talk about how many doctors have actually performed those procedures? Is it across a number of different physicians, or is it just a very specific subset?
Great question. So I think you're right. It is a little bit of a moving target, but let me see if I can rationalize it. So we have sold multiple devices, but many of the devices have been purchased by sites that are using the sites as part of the clinical trial. So they own the device, but they're using it in the clinical trial. So they're not really using it in commercial settings. But we do continue to see increased number of hospitals that are starting to use it in commercial settings. So the two that I talked about, for example, the Turku Hospital in Finland, the Germany Hospital, there's one in Spain. So these hospitals are definitely now starting to use it in commercial setting, and the numbers are still, I would say, below 100 total. Number of patients treated is still below 100 overall. But it definitely is increasing.
That's that number then is above and beyond those that are in the clinical trial, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Perfect. Yes. Okay. So I wonder if you could just help me understand your commentary a little bit more on the reimbursement process. I didn't follow everything, so
yeah.
My apologies. So you were talking about the GBA, which is a joint federal committee, and
yes.
That the panel has voted. Is it in favor of reimbursing TULSA, or is it more just to consider it further?
No, they have. So this is, I realize it's complicated, and I realize that we narrated it in the official version because of the sensitivity about these topics, but I'm happy to elaborate. So I consider this to be a significant step forward. And the reason is that, number one, we have a code. And typically, at this early stage, if you compare this to benchmarks on medical device, even just getting the code takes 3 years, and we're there within a year of starting. Second, the petition that we made to the Joint Federal Committee, or the GBA, was that we represent a new way of implementing current know-how. And this is a very important point. Current know-how is that when we heat tissue to 55 degrees, it dies. And what we said was that we're not a new pill. We're not a drug company. We're not trying to show efficacy that heating to 55 is going to kill the tissue. What we are trying to show is that our way of doing it is going to be far more precise and personalizable and can be done in one time. And they accepted that argument, and I think that is a substantial win for us, because what that meant was that we do not have to do a separate clinical trial in Europe for the purpose of reimbursement, which is what typically happens for the new technologies. So that shortened our time frame by, you know, again, I'm guesstimating on this, but it shortened it by probably 3 years, which is significant, as you can imagine. And so now the next process is to be able to apply for what they call NUB, which is what we have applied for. A number of hospitals have already applied for it, and that decision will come in by end of January. Now, we do expect some reimbursement will take place in 2018. We expect that number to be in the order of about €4,000, because it will be a default reimbursement. But it remains to be seen based upon what the NUB applications and what the response will be. And in those hospitals that have applied, they will have the ability to negotiate higher numbers. So overall, Prakash, this is very positive. We're in the groove, as I say, typically, in the groove of being able to get this product reimbursed. And that certainly, as you can imagine, is going to be a driver of adoption.
Okay. Thank you very much for the further explanation. That makes sense now. Just last question. I'm assuming then that all of the less than 100 patients that you've done on a commercial basis are private pay?
Typically they are in some cases, because in Germany they have a private insurance system and about 20% of the people are as part of that. They are able to negotiate with their insurance companies for this, and many times they are getting approval.
Okay, great. So on that note then, given that the patient benefits of TULSA-PRO are so compelling, is there an opportunity to pursue direct-to-consumer either advertising or patient-focused awareness programs to increase patient flow into the hospitals that have the device?
Yes, Prakash, very much so. In fact, we are building our capabilities to help with social media. We've created a program that we call the Frontiers Program. You'll hear about it in the coming weeks and months quite a bit. And the focus of the Frontiers Program is to work with the leading surgeons in Europe and to help them invite the right mix of the patient population for which our technology would be a good fit. So we would drive patient awareness. We're also, the part of that Frontiers program is also about training the surgeons, the physicians, and the staff, also about making sure all the clinical data is visible to them, also about making sure the reimbursement updates are available to them. So it's a pretty comprehensive program. We're expecting to rolling it out in this quarter, in fact.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prakash.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Rahul Sarguas. Please state your question.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking my question. So I apologize if I missed this during the call, if you had mentioned how many patients so far have been treated in the TACT trial. That's my first question. And the second question is, you'd also mentioned that interim results are going to be read out throughout 2018. Given that, you know, probably half or more of the patients have already been recruited into the trial, I would assume that you have some visibility in terms of, you know, when that 40th or 50th patient will be reading out, and are you able to provide any visibility on that?
Sure, Rahul, good question. We have treated 73 patients. The recruitment rates are coming along very well. All 13 hospitals are recruiting. Having said that, I do want to alert the investors up front that we may be about 6 weeks behind our target, so mid-February, to close out all 110 patients. With respect to your question on the visibility on the data, we do have visibility on the data. We remain comfortable with what we see. And one of the things I mentioned in the prepared remarks is that we expect to have quite have a number of either podium presentations or publications or public statements throughout 2018. As soon as the recruitment is complete, our goal is to present a publication strategy to the community. So you will begin to see that data as early as sometime in Q1 next year.
That's great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. And then, you know what? I think that's good. I'm good with those questions for today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Rahul.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Brian Gannon from Gannon Securities. Please state your question.
That's close enough. Afternoon, gentlemen. Arun, can you give us an update on the Chinese FDA and where you stand with them?
Surely. So before we did the acquisition of Sonali from Philips, they had already applied for regulatory approval in China. The clinical trial was completed. We have received a couple of last-minute questions from them, but our expectation is that we will have Chinese approval by end of this year. And so this is partly why I mentioned earlier that Asia will be an important part of our strategy in 2018.
Okay, so if you get approval, do you think you go to market with partners, existing partners, Chinese partners? What are you thinking about there? And how big is the opportunity?
China is Asia in general represents a substantial opportunity for Sonali platform. And the reason being that the population in Asia is slightly younger. And in the case of fibroid, they that is important because they want to be able to have maintain their fertility. Also, they have a little less fat, which generally makes the procedure faster, which makes it even more practical compared to more invasive procedures like myomectomies or hysterectomies. We think that we want to put a substantial effort in Asia because of that. We have partnership with Philips, and they have a very big organization and a good install base in China. Our vice president of business development has been reviewing it with them, and we do expect to start with Philips, work with Philips in China as a starting point. Over time, we do anticipate that for utilization, we will either build other relationships or we will put a few of direct salespeople on the ground depending upon how the product evolves. The same thing in Japan. We will work with our partners, Siemens and Philips, same thing, we will look to add people as we gauge the market appropriately.
Okay, very good. That would be interesting. You made one comment in your prepared remarks that I'd like to touch on. You said the commercial data is tracking the pilot data. Tracking the pilot trial.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that, and is that a relatively good read-through on what you're seeing on your pivotal at this point?
Right. So, we are not allowed to make direct comments about the pivotal, but what I'm saying is that if you assume that the commercial patients are being treated not very differently than the patients that are being treated in the clinical trial, what we can talk about is the fact that the patients who are being treated in the commercial trial are getting have similar side effect profile to what we saw in our phase one study, which we think is fantastic.
So just to review, so make sure I understand that, you had incontinence in your pilot trial of zero. Erectile dysfunction of approximately 7%.
That's correct.
And you're seeing that across the board on average for your commercial patients.
So on the commercial patients, we are seeing, I don't have exact numbers, but we're seeing, I think it's fair to assume that we're seeing everything in the same part.
Okay. I thought the BPH use was very interesting. I had always thought that there was an opportunity because of the way you're cooling the urethra going in, that this could be a benefit for those patients that have BPH. Do you think that this kind of investigator-initiated productization of your device can be taken to other areas? And really, how flexible is this device? Because this one just kind of came out of thin air.
Yes. Brian, this is, as I said in my comment, is pretty interesting and pretty exciting. And, when we think about what we are selling precision. We're selling ability to personalize because the surgeon literally designs the treatment. And in commercial setting, we're typically completing the procedures in 2 hours or less in many cases. So it is a very flexible platform. That is one of the things we're learning. And so the surgeon, if they want to treat the full gland, they're able to, design the treatment around the whole gland, and then the software will go and treat the whole gland. If they want to, and what we're hearing that in 80% of the cases, they can actually see the cancer in the prostate. In that case, they are able to do what they call partial gland or focal therapy, where they're able to simply create a slice of the gland, and they're able to then treat just a slice of the gland. So I kind of think that it's flexible when we talk about prostate cancer, which is where we've been focused. But what the physicians are now telling us is that they can also use the same technology, the same idea, and then go after benign prostate disease, where they can take, for example, the upper half of the prostate, which tends to be where all these cells are growing and prostates become really large, and they can literally kill just that upper half of the prostate. And I'm finding that to be very particularly interesting because when you think about side effects, all of the erectile dysfunction-related side effects, they are at the bottom of the prostate, below the prostate. So you're way away from them, so the risk is low. When we think about ejaculatory fluid that is coming through the prostate, it is coming from the bottom up. And so if you're really looking at the upper half, you keep all of that safe. So I kind of think this modality and the flexibility and this ability to personalize the treatment and be very precise is going to be very interesting. And, we're going to test all of these theories. We're going to, continue to drive this. But one of the things that I am taking a lot of comfort in is the fact that if I was a urologist and I could treat prostate cancer disease, full gland, partial gland, and I could treat benign, I would want to learn this technology. I would want to make sure that I'm one of the guys ahead of the game on this one. And so this is why I think this is an important development for us.
Okay. Last question. U.S. reimbursement strategy for Tulsa Pro.
Yes. So I think that there are a couple of things. First of all, we have started the process of evaluating this. And because we recognize the importance of reimbursement, and we want to be ahead of the game as we are in Germany. Second, I think that the way we positioned our technology in Germany, I think is kind of giving us more confidence. It doesn't mean we're going to get it fast or anything, but it does mean that the theory, the concept, Germany, which is the next biggest country, the DRG system or the repayment system of United States and Germany are the two closest in the world, in fact. The fact that it worked in Germany, we believe that it gives us more confidence that it could work in the United States also. And ahead of us, HIFU technology has been reimbursed, and the clinical data was not very different than what was used in Germany. So I think it does say that there is a surrogate country, Germany, where it is working, and that it gives us more confidence, and we are working, you know, we will be applying for it. And we think that the clinical data that we will generate from TACT will be meaningful for this purpose.
What's the HIFU reimbursement, and would you be happy if you got similar reimbursement, or can you just glom onto their code at this point?
Yes, the answer is yes. The HIFU in-hospital APC payment is approximately $7,500, and I think that our procedure could be, you know, could be a good procedure in that price range.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have our last question. Our last question from Prakash Gaud, from CIBC. Please state your question.
Thanks very much, Arun. I just wanted to have one follow-up question on the reimbursement issue. I was under the understanding that in Germany, I believe it's around 80% public pay. So new technologies would go to calculating hospitals, and you'd have to place your device and calculate the cost of doing procedures. Then they would gather the feedback and adjust, make a decision on reimbursement that way. Now, with your update today, do you no longer have to go through that process I just described?
No, that's exactly what we're going through at the moment.
That is okay.
So the NUB applications that have been filed are by calculating hospitals, and they will calculate. The difference is that because we have been deemed that no new clinical trial will be required, there is an ablation minimum reimbursement that will be in place, and that is approximately 4,000 euros. So most of the companies, since they have, you know, entirely new technologies, they do not have that base level of reimbursement, and they go through the NUB process. So we will continue to go through NUB process, and the calculating hospitals will work through those, and then over time, the amount of reimbursement typically is adjusted, and that is what we would expect will happen with us too.
Got it. Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, and again, I'm sorry the press releases. I hope everybody has the information.
Have it now.
Is it out now? Okay, excellent. And great questions, and thank you, and I look forward to updating you at the next call. Thank you.